You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll get a roundup of some of the best advice for high school and college graduates, and you can share your advice along the way. You can get started right now. Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a specific type of poetry.
Shijo is a form of poetry that originated in Korea about 700 years ago. And today, it's gaining popularity right here in Wisconsin, as educators have established an annual Wisconsin Shijo competition. Sammy Kim recently talked with some of the organizers about their love of the art form.
Clouds stand still. They look painted on the canvas of the blue sky. Soft grass tickles my arms and legs. Birds chirp loud. Not loud enough to drown out the screams and yelling of my parents inside the house. Shijo is a three-line poetic form out of Korea. I am Elizabeth Jorgensen. I've taught at Arrowhead Union High School for the past 18 years. There's a theme. Line one is the introduction. Line two is the development. And then line three always has a twist and then a conclusion.
So it was a popular form of poetry among the literary elite, often used to express the struggles of everyday life. I'm Lucy Park, one of the founders and the executive director of the Sejong Cultural Society. There is a basic fixed format. It is very rhythmical. And even now, we made some Shijo songs into a hip-hop.
They say go return to land that I don't know. It makes no sense. Born and raised American, so Mexico is still a voice.
Everything my students do in my classroom, we send to writers' markets. And that's where I came upon the Sejong Cultural Society. They host a Shijo competition. Dr. Lucy Park reached out to me and she said, whatever you're doing in your classroom is working.
In 2008, Harvard University contacted the Sejong Cultural Society and suggested starting a Shijo competition for pre-college students. This was the first time we learned that Shijo poetry could be written in English. It was a truly enlightening experience for us.
My students were doing really well. They were placing in the Sejong Cultural Society's competition. You have no idea where it's going to lead you. But if you put in effort, those rewards are going to be bigger than anything you could ever have imagined for yourself.
So I wrote a Shijo poem about the moon. And then I thought about my mother and father. My mother passed away, and my dad passed away. Moon. I saw the pale crescent moon when I learned of mom's passing. Half moon smudged by the night cloud gazed at me when dad departed. Dear moon, with your caressing smile, who are you comforting tonight? 어머니 떠나신 날 쳐다본 창백한 초승달. 아버지 가신 날에 본 얼룩진 반달. 오늘 밤 온화한 미소로 저 달은 누굴 위로하나?
How can we get people to know and appreciate East Asian culture? And I had said, you know, what about Shijo? Could it be our window?
So for children, we want to educate them to become a global citizen. We can bridge the gaps that divide us.
Sammy Kim brought us that story on Shijo, a traditional Korean poetry form. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, if you're graduating high school or college, make sure you remember to stay true to yourself. Follow your passions. Be open to change. It's easy to give out vaguely inspirational advice like that, and if you're a new grad, you're probably hearing some of it. But how do you know which piece of advice is actually worth taking and how to follow through with it? Our next guest went to the experts to look for practical advice that new graduates can actually use. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your own advice for new grads. What do you wish someone had told you when you graduated high school or college? Did you recently graduate? Are you about to? How is it going? What are you hearing? What do you want to know from people who have been through it already? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Allie Volpe is a senior reporter at Vox. She recently asked a bunch of experts and successful people their advice for new graduates. Allie, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
All right, I gave a few examples of that sort of like vaguely comforting advice there. What did you go out in search of?
You know, I was looking for kind of the opposite of exactly what you had said at the top of the segment. You know, those very vague notions that you're like, what am I supposed to do with this? Go find my purpose. What does that mean? So I wanted to chat with, you know, people who actually worked with students, folks who, you know, wrote books about, you know, the subject of work, of life, of work-life balance, of being an adult, about, you know, some of the things that they encountered in their work or things that worked for them, you know, when you are emerging from the cocoon that is high school or college.
We heard from some people already on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Chad, who writes, invest as soon as possible, 10%. Learn a trade as soon as possible. It'll always be needed. You can afford to make apprenticeship wages now before life happens. Never use credit unless you can pay it off on the due date. You got some advice from people, not exactly with the apprenticeship, but on the idea of, you know, saving early on and looking ahead at our future plans in that way.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a big one of like setting a budget, knowing what is realistic for you. This is something that I did not do. And just looking at like how your compensation breaks down into net versus gross income. Figure out like how much your expenses are and how much what you take home every month or every week will cover those things. And then make sure to set aside some money for emergencies, for the fun things we do in life. It's just always easier to have a clearer picture of like where your dollars are going versus just going into it blindly.
And one piece of advice you got also was not just to think about money in the future, but to talk about money all the time and to kind of overcome, I think, a taboo we often have of talking about our finances and our financial well-being. This is from a former Wall Street trader. Can you talk more about that advice?
Right. Talk money with your friends. And I also think with your colleagues as well. We kind of get into our own lane and we, you know, aren't really having discussions about what other folks are making. And some of the biggest realizations you can make is, you know, someone who is in a similar position or similar field, and you realize maybe they're making a lot more than you. And then you can advocate for yourself that way. Yeah, we won't know what to ask for unless we are having those discussions. And yeah, while it may be taboo or weird, I think the tides are changing. I think we should always be having those discussions with our friends, especially, you know, I have a lot of high school friends that I still keep in touch with, and it's helpful to sort of gauge, you know, what we're all making, even though we're all in different industries, because it's nice to sort of keep tabs on, okay, this is what people who are earning at a similar level in their careers as I am.
You mentioned, Allie, that a lot of the advice you heard back from these experts had to do with our relationship to our work and the role of our career in our lives. I like this one. One of your experts said, don't think what career do I want? Think what do I want my life to look like and work toward the career from there. Can you flesh that out a little bit?
Yeah, I think so often when we graduate, you know, we have that degree in hand and we've been preparing for a career throughout our education. And so it's normal to think about what that job is going to look like because that's what you've worked so hard for. And something that they don't teach you in school is, well, what is your life going to look like outside of that job? And I think it's really important to prioritize the things that you care about because the work, it should be the thing that supports the rest of your life. While a lot of jobs are all encompassing, the whole reason of life is to enjoy it a little more. And so I think having having a clear picture of those boundaries and that balance is something that's super important.
We are talking about career advice, new advice for graduates at the high school or college level. Allie Volpe is with us from Vox. She has an article on the topic, and we want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. What is your advice for new graduates of high school or college? What is the worst or best advice that you got when you graduated? Join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Allie Volpe, senior reporter at Vox, about advice for new high school and college graduates, and we want to hear your advice for new grads. Join in at 800-642-1234. What is your advice for that new graduate at any level? What do you wish someone had said to you? If you could go back in time and send yourself a message on graduation day, what would it be? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. A lot of people think about finding their purpose in life, and Allie, and one of your experts said it's not so much finding your purpose, it doesn't necessarily magically exist, but cultivating a purpose in life. What's the difference?
Yeah, I mean, some people think that a purpose is magically going to fall out of the sky into their lap and you'll figure it out one day. But experts told me in another story as well that it takes a lot of work, a lot of cultivation. And even people in their 40s and 50s often don't have a sense of purpose. So if you don't have one, that's fine. But it does take a little bit of soul searching. We have to think about, like, one, what it is we want out of our lives. So what do you hope to accomplish? What matters to you? So think about your strengths and how you can put forth those strengths into your values. And, like, what skills or talents do you have? What do you enjoy doing? And putting all those things together is sort of how we can work towards cultivating a purpose, basically by how we want to leave a mark on the world, how it impacts other people, and what it is we're good at and what we enjoy doing.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Steve is with us in Mequon. Steve, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Steve?
The thought I've got, or that served me well graduating from the University of Wisconsin, was don't worry about that initial pay. And don't think about making a decision based on your initial pay, or sometimes even asking what the pay is. Know the company that you're going to work for. Go in there and exceed their expectations, and I'll trust me, your pay will take care of it the rest of your career.
Steve, and that worked out for you that way?
It's worked out pretty well. I retired about at 58 and many different careers, but it was quite successful.
Steve, thanks a lot for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. I don't know. Some people had different, some of the experts you talked to, Allie, had different approaches to how much to commit yourself to a company. What kind of things that you heard does Steve's comment make you think about?
Right. I think about advocating for yourself a lot. And I think no matter what salary is offered to you, I think it's always worth it to negotiate at any level of your career. It's always worth asking for more money, because what's the worst they can say is no. And yeah, I think it's always worth asking for more, and to never put all of your eggs in one basket as far as a job, because the company unfortunately won't love you as much as you love it. That's something I wish that I had learned earlier, as someone who's been through a couple of layoffs myself. As much as you love a job or love a company or love a boss, ultimately these relationships are business ones. And so at the end of the day, you know, they can get rid of you if they so please. So I think to sort of think of it in a way that this is a thing that supports my life, rather than this is a very emotional thing.
Steve, thanks a lot for sharing your experience. Glad it worked out well for you at 800-642-1234. Talking about advice for new graduates with Allie Volpe, senior reporter at Vox. She talked to a bunch of people who have a lot of great advice, some practical advice for people who are graduates. We want to hear yours at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We also asked around here at Wisconsin Public Radio, our own Emily Ralph said, one thing I talk a lot about is finding an arc or area of interest, the slice of the pie graph with stuff you like. Like my thing was always audio, Emily says, since I was a kid. The audio slice of the pie has a lot of cool stuff, recording, live sound, sound design for film, a million other things. Of course, radio. Emily does some good audio here for that. Making career moves in that area can be pretty easy once you start networking. And Emily says, also know your weaknesses. I can do anything in audio, but I'm terrible at math and a really bad dancer. Yeah, me too, Emily. So that idea of finding an interest, something we're good at, Allie, and then finding out different ways to apply it in our career in different circumstances. What do you think?
I love that. I think that's great. Yeah, because like where you have talents, often it's a branch out into something else. And it could even be like a hobby that can enrich your life in a different kind of way. Whether, you know, for myself, I'm a writer, but to do some sort of creative writing or, you know, dabble in improv or comedy, these things can enrich your lives in different ways, but still play to your skill sets.
Now, here's an interesting bit of advice you got from a privacy and technology lawyer and author. Think of your postgraduate life in semesters. So not just one big picture life path, but breaking it up into segments. Why would we do that?
Yeah, the rest of life can seem very intimidating. You're like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do for the next, you know, 30 plus years? And to break it down into smaller semesters kind of makes it more manageable. You can think, okay, what is coming for me for the next few months of my life? What do I want goals for this season of my life to be? And it kind of makes it less scary, less like a wide open field of nothing in front of you. So if you can set goals of, you know, I want to accomplish X, Y, and Z in this quarter, or, you know, I'd like to have a promotion by this time next year, it helps make the transition into, you know, the real world, the adult world, a lot more manageable.
And we heard from Sarah Lair here at WPR, who says, join your local library, start putting even a small amount of money away for retirement, and make friends with someone a few decades older at work to find your mentor. Now, that's a piece of advice looking back I wish I had done of finding a mentor early in my career. Allie, what do you think? I'm not sure if anybody specifically gave that advice to you of the experts you talked to.
No, but I love that advice. Having someone who has a little bit more experience, more insight, it's so invaluable. And even if you aren't in a traditional office environment, as a freelancer, I, you know, through networking, found someone who I consider my mentor. And having that relationship, that insight into, you know, what someone a couple steps ahead of you in their career can expect is so, so, so helpful. And they can help kind of calm your fears if you're freaking out about something. Oh, I'm not doing this right. Or, you know, what's coming next for me? They can sort of calm you down and hold your hand through this very stressful time in life.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Richard is with us in Milwaukee. Richard, hi.
Hi. My advice would be, no matter where you are at your career, but especially early in your career, that you work trying to make yourself useful to the company or institution you work for, that you invent and create things they don't expect you to invent and create, so as to be more valuable to the company or institution, and so they would never think of letting you go.
Richard, thanks a lot. Make yourself indispensable to the place you work at, Allie. What do you think?
I know. I mean, that's great. If you're a central part of that machine that's turning, you know, you're not replaceable. Also, I liked that bit about, you know, finding things that interest you within the job, too, and kind of creating more opportunities for yourself, because that's one way that you can grow within a company and to, yeah, find those things that interest you, those room areas of opportunity. I think that's really good advice.
Richard, thanks for that. Our own Jeffrey Potter here at WPR says he learned a valuable life lesson early on, even before he graduated. He was rejected by nearly every college he applied to, felt rejected, felt like he was going to a fallback school, thought it was everything he didn't want, too close to home, too many people. And he says, guess what? It was exactly the experience he needed. He loved it, made friends, was able to do a lot of things that changed his life along the way. Now, that fits in with one of the pieces of advice you found, Allie. Somebody said, be open to plans changing. It's okay if the paths and goals and things like that change, and it can actually be a good thing.
Yeah, I think when we're young, we have this set vision of how we think our life is going to go. And then if you veer off of that path, you're like, oh my gosh, what now? Am I a failure? Are my dreams not going to pan out? And that's just life. You know, things will veer off course, and that's totally fine. And sometimes the things that are meant for you will happen, and it just takes time.
In our last minute or so, Allie, what stood out to you? What seemed like the best advice that you wish you had had when you graduated from high school or college?
Oh, man. I think it's that bit about, you know, the work-life balance. I wish I had someone telling me that, you know, throwing yourself all into work is great, but also having a life is great, and to enjoy your weekends and to not work on your weekends, because there are limited weekends in your teens and your 20s. You will never get those back. And so, yeah, to trust that everything will work out, but don't sacrifice who you are and your time and your free brain space for somebody else.
Allie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Allie Volpe, senior reporter at Vox. She talked to us about advice for new graduates. That article I mentioned where she got a lot of advice from experts from various fields, we've got that linked at WPR.org/Central Time. And hey, you can keep your advice for new grads coming over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org. And congratulations to anybody who's graduated college this year or is knocked on the door of graduating from high school in the next couple few weeks. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, a lot of families have unique words and phrases that they've invented over the years. Martha Barnett from Away with Words is back with us for a look at Familects, the dialects that families invent that they only speak in their own households. And many people say they plan to work after retirement, but far fewer people actually do. That's just one finding of a new survey that shows a mismatch between our beliefs about retirement and the reality for retired people. We'll take a look at that survey, get some advice, and you, as always, can join in with your own experiences and advice for others. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then we'll talk to one of the organizers leading the expansion of professional soccer here in Wisconsin about how and why the sport is growing in our state. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, find out what's at stake in negotiations over the federal debt limit and what happens if Republicans and Democrats don't reach an agreement. First, soccer might not be the first sport that comes to mind when you think about Wisconsin, but the game is gaining popularity in the state with major expansions in the works. Madison's lower-level professional men's soccer team, Forward Madison FC, led its league in attendance in 2022. And earlier this month, the team announced plans to bring the first professional women's soccer team to Wisconsin starting in the fall of 2024. Two of the founders of Forward Madison also announced plans last fall to build a new sports and entertainment district in Milwaukee that will host a new professional men's soccer team starting in 2025. And last summer, Lambeau Field in Green Bay hosted its first ever soccer game with a high-profile exhibition matchup between a top German team, Bayern Munich, and a top British team, Manchester City. It's an exciting time for soccer fans in Wisconsin and a good time to get into the sport if you thought about giving it a try. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a soccer fan or curious about the game? What do you think about the growth of professional soccer here in Wisconsin? Do you want to see it come to your neck of the woods? Have you been to a professional game? What was the experience like? Do you play at any level? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Connor Kaloya is the chief operating officer of Big Top Sports and Entertainment. He's one of the founders of Forward Madison FC and the former Green Bay Voyageurs soccer team. He's going to be the COO for the new professional women's team in Madison and the new professional men's team in Milwaukee. Connor, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Let's start with some of the newest news here, the announcement of the first professional women's soccer team here in Wisconsin. What can you tell us about the plans?
Yeah, you know, we have secured a franchise for a first division, so the top division of professional soccer in the U.S. So we've secured a franchise for our first division women's club. that could start play here in Madison as soon as 2025. Now, we have a clear path to bring the franchise here. With that being said, our great facility, Bree Stevens Field, needs some renovations and improvements to get up to the standard of a first division professional soccer club. We need a new turf on the field, some additional seating, and then the proper infrastructure for women's specific locker rooms and kind of back of house needs. And if we can work with the city of Madison to make those improvements to the facility, we'll be bringing women's professional soccer here to Madison.
And this is something you've thought about for a while. You've said elsewhere that Forward Madison could have started a women's soccer team already at an amateur level. You had wanted to wait, though, to make sure it was a fully professional team. Why was that important?
Yeah, you know, since we launched Forward Madison, so we announced Forward Madison in 2018. We started playing in 2019. At that time, we hoped within 3 to 5 years, we'd be able to secure a women's franchise for Madison as well. And it was actually 5 years and one day that it took us to secure a women's franchise. You know, everything we've done with Forward Madison, we work with our supporters, our great fans, our season ticket holders. They're the lifeblood of the club. They direct the decision-making of the club. And since the start, you know, with Forward Madison, they picked our team colors. They picked our team name. They even picked the logo that we use. And as we've explored women's soccer, especially over the last 3 years, we've regularly convened focus groups with our supporters group to guide us on what we should be doing. And in talking to the supporters group, you know, there was a league that existed that was an amateur league. We had the opportunity to join that league on the women's side, and our supporters felt strongly that it just didn't feel right that you would have a paid men's team and an unpaid women's team. And they didn't think that that told the right story from an equity standpoint. And so we have kind of stepped back and encouraged the league to start a professional product. And here we are a few years later. There's a professional women's league, and we're excited to have secured a franchise. And hopefully bring a first division women's league team to the stadium where a third division men's team is playing.
Talking to Connor Kaloya with Big Top Sports and Entertainment, looking at pro soccer here in Wisconsin, what's happening now, and a couple teams in the works over the next couple years. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Current soccer fans love to hear from you about your thoughts on these teams opening up here in the state. If you have questions about what goes into creating a soccer team, join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Connor, before we head on over to these plans for Milwaukee another year down the road, just want to get your thoughts on the popularity of soccer here in Wisconsin. What are you seeing in terms of hunger for teams in the state?
Yeah, you know, the way that our announcement last week has been received has just been overwhelming, overwhelmingly positive. You know, there's 51,000 youth players across the state under the age of 35. Americans consume soccer at the same rate they consume baseball and basketball. 10 years ago, there was about 45 professional teams, outdoor professional teams in the U.S. Now there's more than 120. So there's just been rapid growth over the last 10 years. We expect that growth to continue. I think what's happened with Forward Madison here in Madison has exceeded what our expectations were when we launched this club. And we're seeing great demand and interest in both our future Milwaukee club, but also the Madison women's professional soccer team. With the World Cup coming to North America in 2026, we think there's only going to be an increased interest in outdoor spectator soccer. And we think over the next 20 years, that interest will continue to grow. So we're excited to continue to invest in the space and do more to bring more soccer to the fans of Wisconsin.
I want to expand on something you mentioned there. How much of increasing interest in soccer in the U.S. is coming from, you know, those kids playing it and their parents? I'll speak from personal experience. I didn't know from soccer growing up, really. My kids played it from kindergarten through, well, still into college now. And I'm, you know, not the hardest core fan, but I certainly appreciate the game a lot more. Is my story a pretty common one?
Totally is, yeah. And you know, our core demographic with soccer. Soccer is a little bit more of a, what I would say, like a lifestyle sport than it is kind of your traditional mainstream sports. And our core demographic at Forward Madison, it's a very diverse group of 25 to 35 year olds. And if we're connecting with that group, then their parents and adults think it's cool. And as long as we maintain a family friendly product, We'll continue to connect with the youth soccer players and their parents. And so you're absolutely right. As I mentioned, 51,000 youth players across the state. A lot of parents or parents with young kids have had kids play soccer. That's connected them to the game. And once they're watching their kids play, then they might pick up a Major League Soccer game on TV or an English Premier League game, and then, you know, check out their local professional team like Forward Madison. So there's absolutely been rapid growth at the youth level. It continues to grow. And just soccer is so much more accessible, especially at the younger ages, whether it be from a video game standpoint, from watching English Premier League or Major League Soccer. When we were growing up, or, you know, when I was growing up, soccer was not nearly as accessible it is now. So that's a big part of it.
Now let's go to Milwaukee. This plan is a little further out. Can you tell us about a new men's professional team in the works there? It'll be at a higher league level than the one that's currently in Madison. Tell us your hopes for that one.
Yeah, we secured a franchise in the USL Championship. So it's the second division of American soccer, mainly markets of a million plus teams, 26 markets across the U.S. And we've, acquired a 12-acre parcel of land in the Westtown district at 6th in Michigan. And we have plans to build an 8,000-seat soccer stadium, a 200-key hotel, and about 170 workforce multifamily housing units, retail and entertainment space. So it's a comprehensive development. We've already started demolition on the site. The housing element of the site has started. And we're hopeful that we can be up and playing soccer there as soon as 2025. It'd be the highest level of men's professional soccer in the state. It would be the home of Marquette's men's and women's soccer and lacrosse teams. And it would really be kind of an outdoor community venue to bring together many different entertainment uses and something, you know, if you look across the country, you look at the largest markets without professional soccer, Milwaukee's one of the top five markets in the U.S. that doesn't have a high-level professional soccer team.
Now, I mentioned that Green Bay team. It was at a league lower than the Madison one. It only lasted a few years. Is there something about, you know, a place like Madison not having a lot of competition in the pro sports world in general? Whereas in Green Bay, you know, there's another sport that kind of overshadows everything else there. Milwaukee, you've got a couple established teams in major leagues. Is that kind of other sport competition, does that make it harder for a pro soccer team to stand out?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I think Green Bay, that team, it was an amateur team. The season ran from mid-May to July, and it was really, the pandemic made that business model really challenging. And coming out of the pandemic, after a short run there, you know, we kind of just decided to focus on our professional soccer operations. We think pro teams in the state are a more viable option. While there is a lot of competition in Milwaukee, we think there's a massive void in the market as it relates to soccer. You know, we had nearly 5,000 people submit names for the team. I think yesterday we started to put up different possibilities of what we would call the team in our Name the Team contest. We had over 10,000 votes in the first day. So there's amazing engagement. I think there's a pent-up demand in Milwaukee to have professional soccer. Actually, in 2014, a supporters group started with the sole focus of trying to bring pro soccer to Milwaukee. That was the Milwaukee Barons. In at one time, I think they surpassed over 5,000 Facebook followers. So there's a lot of interest in the market. We think it'll be a great place to have professional soccer. And while there is competition, we think the interest will allow us to kind of step into that space and have some success.
We're talking to Forward Madison FC Chief Operating Officer Connor Kaloya about the growth of professional soccer in Wisconsin and the response from fans and communities in the state. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see soccer getting more interest in your community, maybe in your own family? Did you inherit a love of soccer from your kids at some point along the way, as I did? Have you been to a professional soccer match, MLS, something overseas, or a local team? Call it and tell us about it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation with Connor Kaloya, COO of the soccer team Forward Madison FC. He'll hold the same position for new professional teams, two new teams coming to Wisconsin, most likely over the next couple of years, a women's team in Madison at the top level of women's play, and a men's team in Milwaukee, one level below the top there. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. No soccer fans out there today. Have you been to a game? Have you played yourself? Are you excited at a possible growth in professional soccer options here in the state? Women's teams, men's teams, join in with your thoughts, your experiences, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Connor, how important was Forward Madison and its attendance levels to the impetus to bring in these other teams in the state? How much of it was a test case for bringing in these other teams?
Yeah, so it was the first professional team, outdoor professional team, in 20 years here in the state. And I think that the way the community connected with the team went beyond what we expected. And we've shipped merchandise to 50 states, 32 countries. That's far beyond what we ever expected when we created this club with the help of the community. When we launched Madison at that time, we had contemplated kind of a statewide strategy for spectator soccer. So, Milwaukee was kind of on our minds. But after that first season in Madison, keep in mind that was pre-pandemic, but in 2019, after that first season, that really kind of made us confident to, move forward with a club in Milwaukee, but also push harder to bring a women's professional team here to Madison. So, it's been a great test case. And I think what we've only seen and what we're only seeing across, locally and across the country is an increased interest and growth in pro soccer.
I'm getting ahead of the game here with the women's team. It is a top level team. If there are soccer celebrities in the United States, it's the U.S. Women's team with a lot of World Cups under their belt. Is there a hope, a dream that some of those star players might end up on a Wisconsin team?
Yeah, we're a few years away, but I do think, there's a significant difference on the men's side versus the women's side. While soccer is very good in the U.S., the men's U.S. national team may be, top 16 in the world regularly. The U.S. women's national team is the top, or hopefully is the favorite to win the Women's World Cup this summer. And so the best women's soccer players in the world come from the U.S. And so, yeah, the hope would be that at some time in the near future or in the early years of the club, we would be able to have, a women's national team player on the roster. We'll be playing at the first division. We're going to work to build this club in a way that it'll be competitive at the first division. And it would be great to have some women that play at the highest level on the club.
Bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Laura is with us in Manitowoc. Laura, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just heard you, put your shout out for people to call in, and I just had to call in because I have to represent. There can't be no callers for the fans of soccer. I just wanted to give our little story that I'm a mom of two kids, both of whom played soccer in high school. My son's actually a player on his team now. He's the goalie. His older sister was on a pretty successful high school team here in Wisconsin. And it started because her dad had a cousin who played soccer professionally in another country. And I just really wanted to steer my kids. I didn't want to spend, frankly, the whole winter sitting in a basketball court. So there's a little selfishness to it. But I love soccer, and I wish it had been around when I was a kid.
And Laura, has that translated into you and your family going to see games, doing soccer tourism to take in pro games?
My daughter and her boyfriend and my husband went to see the first professional soccer game that was held at Lambeau Field. I think it was just this last winter, was it?
Yep. And how about that weather?
That was a big deal. Yeah, they really enjoyed it.
Laura, thanks so much for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Connor, I think you're probably hoping there are a lot of fans out there like Laura and her family.
We hope there's more than one fan. Yeah, Rob, that is the hope. But no, you hit on the point earlier that absolutely a lot of people are connecting with the game through their kids. When we were growing up, or people of our generation, I have a 6 and a 9-year-old, I'm in my early 40s, you played soccer, but there wasn't the opportunity to consume soccer like there is now. And Laura mentioned the Lambeau Field match, and that's a great testament to the desire and interest in soccer in the state, a sold out Lambeau Field for the first professional soccer match ever played there.
Thanks a lot for that call, Laura. Willem joins us now in Colfax. Willem, hi.
Hi. I remember I'm an immigrant to this country. I came with my parents in the late 1950s, early 60s, and my dad used to play semi-pro soccer in the Netherlands, and he started a team in Holland, Michigan, called the Holland Hotspurs, because his favorite team was the Tottenham Hotspurs. So they would play teams from Grand Rapids and Kalamazoo, and Battle Creek. I can't remember the name of the league, but there were mostly foreign immigrant players from Germany and Czechoslovakia. There was a guy from Pakistan. Anyway, so that was interesting, but there was nothing, you know, happening in American soccer. And when I was a child, they used to play soccer in grade school. Everyone would just gather around the ball and kick at it, and that's not how you play the game.
Willem, thanks a lot for sharing that. So some predecessors here, kind of, I want to know more about that league that Willem's dad played in, but can you talk about immigrants bringing attention to the game here in Wisconsin and beyond?
Yeah, so, you know, in the 1950s and 60s, Milwaukee was one of the best soccer markets in the entire U.S. And Milwaukee, Cincinnati, St. Louis, those were kind of the premier soccer markets. And a lot of that is because a lot of immigrants played with their teams, whether it be the Croatian Eagles or the Serbian teams, the Bavarians. And, you know, if you look now, this is 60 years later, but those markets that were really good, soccer markets in the 1950s and 60s, driven by immigrant populations, now are great professional markets. Cincinnati and St. Louis have new stadiums and have amazingly successful major league soccer teams. So, you know, Milwaukee and Wisconsin as a whole has always been a very good soccer state. It's been underserved from a spectator soccer standpoint. We've started to fill that void here in Madison and are excited to fill that void in Milwaukee.
Thanks for sharing that with us, Willem. Teresa joins us now in Madison. Teresa, hi.
Hello. Obviously, I come from England. Chelsea, I support entirely. Been to the FA Cup twice. Somebody mentioned the Lambeau Field game. That was a bloody disgrace. They both put on their second teams, and you're paying a fortune. On to the soccer. My daughter was a brilliant player, played for the top teams in Madison. You get to a certain age, and then those girls are just like fodder. They're just traded from one to the other. I travelled all over with a baby. I supported her entirely. But at the end of the day, I didn't want to sacrifice, you know, how she was going to do mentally being treated like that.
Teresa, thanks for the call. I thought there were a lot of starters at that Lambeau game, but point taken. But Teresa, wondering what's happening at these higher levels for girls in the sport. Connor, do you have thoughts on what's happening at the higher end of the youth leagues?
Yeah, I think Teresa brings up a valid point there. And we're, you know, couple thoughts on that. First of all, from a women's professional standpoint, you know, there's 101 men's professional teams in the U.S. There's 12 women's professional teams. That's just amazingly inequitable. And there's a lot of great women's professional or women's soccer players that aren't getting the chance to play professionally. One unique thing about our kind of league is we will have an academy product that allows girls from ages 13 and up to play. We'll likely eventually have an amateur product that connects with college age women, and then also a pro product. So we will create a pipeline. I do get Teresa's point that youth soccer, and especially at the competitive level, can be, can be a lot. And I think that is something, you know, we're not in the youth space, we're in the professional space, but something we do try and work with the 41 area youth clubs here in the Madison Area Youth Soccer Association. And we'll be working with the Milwaukee clubs as well to kind of make sure that we're all working together to develop a sustainable and great game together.
Teresa, thanks for that call. And my daughter is also a Chelsea supporter. Connor, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Connor Kaloya, Chief Operating Officer of Big Top Sports and Entertainment, where he founded and now operates the Forward Madison FC soccer team. With us today to talk about the growth of pro soccer in the state, with plans announced for a new women's team in Madison and a men's team in Milwaukee. Coming up after the news, could the federal government default on its debts? We'll look at the fast approaching federal debt limit and what to expect if an agreement can't be reached in time. I'm Rob Verrett. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.